Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Some people don't learn. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
Months after Postal Service workers were hacked in a massive data breach that exposed hundreds of thousands of Social Security numbers, scores of them have fallen prey again to a similar scheme.
There's a new trend emerging for TV series. One of the new shows trying it, Fargo on FX. But is viewer loyalty an issue? We'll explain what's happening.
Bad news for fans of Pumpkin launching. The Pumpkin Chunkin' event, scheduled for next month in Delaware, has been canceled for the second straight year. You'll hear why.
Jennifer, the bearer of bad news. And the popularity of Tommy John surgery in baseball and how players deal with the scarring.
The surgery's an epidemic now. You know, about a quarter of pitchers in all of baseball have it. There's a certain percentage of pitchers that are having to have it twice. And it's not just pitchers, it's position players, catchers, and, you know, basically anyone who throws, who's putting stress in their elbow. And, you know, it's just become to the point where the scar, the mark of the surgery, is everywhere.
Tim Rowan, sports writer at the New York Times, has a look at the scars of the game. He's here in just a few minutes. Well, the flooding in South Carolina is considered of biblical proportions. You've probably seen pictures or video. That said, this is at least the sixth time since the year 2010 that the country as a whole has experienced a so-called one in 1,000 years rain event. More from Doyle Rice, weather reporter at USA Today. Doyle, put this in perspective.
South Carolina just in the last week has picked up, I've seen estimates of as much as 4.4 trillion gallons of water, if you can imagine such a thing. It's been really an unprecedented event in South Carolina. Many places have set rainfall records that date back well over 100 years. It's certainly one for the record books in South Carolina.
All right, so we heard Governor Nikki Haley the other day say this is a one in a thousand year type of rain slash flooding event, but as you point out, they seem to be, I don't know, more common across the U.S. in the past few years.
Yeah, and here's where we get into kind of an interesting or difficult thing to explain it. That's the one in 1,000 year rain event is something that scientists use, and it may not be the best description. It's kind of one that they came up with, and it gets pretty complicated and in the weeds pretty quick. But it actually doesn't necessarily mean that it would only happen one in 1,000 years. It means really that on any given day, on any given location, there's a one in 1,000 chance of that specific amount of rain falling. So it's a little more fine of a definition than one in 1,000 years, but that's kind of how it's morphed into kind of in the popular lexicon, if that makes any sense. So we have had a number of these in the last few years, and places as far apart as Colorado. I believe there was one in Baltimore earlier in 2014. There's been some in Nebraska even. And again, you can, it sounds weird, but you can actually have a multiple one in 1,000 year storms, but they're all in different locations, so that there is, it's not completely messed up to say that we could have these many events in just a short period of time over a large area.
Got it. We're speaking with Doyle Rice, weather reporter at USA Today. Mm-hmm. His piece is about this flooding in South Carolina and how it's the sixth 1,000 year event since 2010 across the country. Causes, Doyle, who's saying what here?
Yeah, it's a mix. I mean, you know, there's always the elephant in the room of climate change, and it's man-made climate change is supposed to bring a little bit more warmth, which can produce a little bit more moisture in the air, and then there's a chance that it would bring about more heavy rain events. That is one of there is scientific, peer-reviewed scientific literature that says some of the heaviest rain events will increase and are increasing due to climate change. But this particular event in South Carolina, a specific link might be a little challenging to make. Some scientists say can't really do that with this one event, or really with any one event, to say, oh, I can hang my hat and saying that's due to man-made climate change. It's always a mix of natural, and then this the climate change is always just kind of there, sometimes adding and sometimes not to the mix.
All right. Also, did you say, to a certain extent, the U.S. may be behind the times in trying to address the flooding in general.
Yeah, there was some one scientist I spoke to. He said that some of these infrastructures that we have to deal with heavy rain events are kind of more, they're out of date. Some of the flood systems that we have were built, when there was a lot of less people, and just when we didn't seem to have these large rain events as frequently as we do now. And so that when we do get one, there's going to be more flooding, just due to the flood control measures and that we have are kind of a bit out of date. I think that was one possibility of what was going on in South Carolina.
Boy, also, was there a stat that said something along the lines of South Carolina's had more rain these past few days than California's had in three-something years?
Oh, yeah, that's easily the case. And, California is by nature, many parts of California are drier than South Carolina. But just the fact that it was in such a short period of time in South Carolina, we're talking 5 or 6 days, they picked up more rain than some parts of California have in the last 3 or 4 years. And California has been in a terrific and historic drought. So, that stat did leap out at you. That just to give just some idea of the scale of kind of how this country has very, very wet portions and at the same time can have very, very dry portions. Kind of the nature of climate in the United States is such that these things can happen.
Thanks, Doyle. It's Doyle Rice, weather reporter at USA Today. It's 13 minutes now after the hour on this morning, or this weekend, rather. Coming up next, managing the scars of Tommy John surgery.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service with voice over internet. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be spending some me time at the spa." But the thing about better is, there's always more better. So today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on by a masseuse named Moonshadow, but with its nose to the grindstone, transforming communications for your business by making it better. With a cloud-based infrastructure that grows as your business grows, seamless mobility between all devices so you don't miss that important call, even while Moonshadow is walking down your spine. And all for less than you think. So while you're getting your mani-pedi, Vonage's toenails remain a complete disaster, because Vonage is still out there working to make more better. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call Vonage at 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
With the baseball playoffs upon us, seems there's at least one of these in every baseball clubhouse. I'm not talking about the clown or the guy with the short fuse. I'm talking about a player with a scar from Tommy John surgery, the artwork you're rewarded with after a surgeon repairs your ulnar collateral ligament, which connects the humerus bone in the upper arm to the ulna bone in your forearm. Here's Tim Rowan from the New York Times, who spoke to some players about that little reminder. Tim, what have you found?
The surgery's an epidemic now. About a quarter of pitchers in all of baseball have it. There's a certain percentage of pitchers that are having to have it twice. And it's not just pitchers, it's position players, catchers, and, basically anyone who throws, who's putting stress in their elbow. And, it's just become to the point where the scar, the mark of the surgery, is everywhere. And there's several players in each clubhouse. You look around and they all design kind of same mark. And our goal is kind of to try and profile the state of the surgery and what this kind of mark means in the state of the game today.
I was curious after reading the bunch of profiles that you did. Most of the guys said it has worked out well. One pitcher maybe at the end said he kind of lost some velocity or something. But has anybody said that the Tommy John surgery simply did not work out and they left the game? Like, is there anybody like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I spoke to 40 players, former players, about who've had the surgery, and several of them had negative experiences. Francisco Liriano, the Pirates, like you said, lost about 6 miles off his fastball. He had to completely learn how to pitch again, become a new pitcher, essentially. John Farrell, the manager of the Boston Red Sox, he had the surgery twice. In the early 90s, and it essentially ended his career. That interview didn't make it in there. But and then another one, Dave Island, pitching coach for the Kansas City Royals, been in the playoffs the last couple of years. The surgery essentially ended his career, too. So, that's the thing that players don't always realize when they're diagnosed with it, that, the doctors tell them there's a roughly about an 80% success rate with the surgery, and they never think that they can be in that 20% where it just doesn't work, and the ligament isn't strong enough for them to keep pitching professional baseball.
Yeah. It's interesting. These days, these guys make so much money, you think, well, if it doesn't work out, they've, hopefully banked some of the big earnings they've made. But as you point out, like when Tommy John himself had this in, 1972, the doctor said, do you have a plan B?
Yeah. No, yeah. But, I mean, it was a different time in baseball. It was, 1974, and he was, he already pitched, several years in the majors. And I think Tommy John relayed that anecdote kind of as a way to show how gentle and caring Dr. Frank Jobe was, the doctor who pioneered the surgery. And he's the one who really kind of spread it. He's the one that taught a lot of the top surgeons today how to perform it. And, a lot of them still kind of hear his voice echoing when they're performing the surgery. So his fingerprints are still all over this. So, it's that was just an example of a different time, a different era, back when players might have had to worry about whether they had money banked up.
Yeah. We're speaking with Tim Rowan, Mets beat writer for the New York Times, and he's got a fascinating look at a number of players who've had the Tommy John surgery. The piece is called The Scars of the Game. What surprised me, I guess, was that even some position players have had it. I never realized that, but explain some of those guys.
Yeah, it's like anything. They're not throwing the ball 100 times every 5 days like a starting pitcher, but, they're still putting stress on it. I talked to Matt Wieters, the catcher for the Baltimore Orioles, and he's got to make that throw down to second base, right, whenever a runner's stealing. And he's come back now, and he's still trying to regain the feel. It's not so much that he doesn't have the power to throw, but it just feels differently. There's different mechanics in your elbow when you have a different ligament, man-made ligament in there. And the outfielders get it. Carl Crawford of the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's a common Matt Holliday of the St. Louis Cardinals. It's not completely uncommon for them to get it too, just because those are throwing positions, right? They have to make those long throws. Carl said he hurt his long tossing when he was on the disabled list and he's trying to keep his arm healthy.
Wow.
It comes in all shapes and sizes, and people don't exactly realize that just because it's so obvious with the pitchers, but how much they're throwing and how hard they're throwing these days and how big and strong they are.
Yeah. But at least a couple of guys too in your story, I think John Smoltz included in that group, said, kids these days, stop pitching 12 months out of the year, right? I mean, take it easy on your body. This is part of the problem today.
Yeah, that was a big theme that came out of my research and my interviews was, Dr. Andrews, Tommy John, John Smoltz, these guys are all, pointing to the fact that kids are playing year-round baseball, and there's such an emphasis on throwing hard. John Farrell said the worst thing that could have happened was putting pitch clocks, or velocity clocks in ballparks that count the speed of,
the
speed of every single pitch, and there's such an emphasis on it. The higher the velocity, the more stress it's put on the elbow.
Of course. Thanks, Tim. Tim Rowan, Mets beat writer for the New York Times. He spoke with Colby Lewis from the Texas Rangers. He said, do people ask about the scar? Colby said, well, most people notice it because I tattooed little safety pins around it. Says it looks like they're kind of holding it together. And he's no stranger to surgeries, by the way. Well, he's had the Tommy John. He's had two elbow surgeries, two shoulders and a hip. Total of 5. 22 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. The sort of shave that cuts clean, without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, 3 of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How are we able to save you all this money and still give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 1313 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 1313.
'Tis the season when many of us are kicking around the idea of upgrading our smartphone. If you haven't done it in a while, there are some changes to the process that you should know about. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
If you pay outright for your phone, you may save on your plan. So says Caitlin Pitzker, who's here from Kiplinger's Personal Finance to give us the latest on smartphone plans. Caitlin, it used to be that everyone had to get a long-term phone contract. Is that still the case?
Things have been changing over the last few years. A lot of people are accustomed to signing that two-year contract, and a benefit that usually came with it was a nice phone subsidy. And some consumers may think that the cost of their latest and greatest smartphone is about $200, but really they're a lot more expensive out of pocket. And consumers are starting to realize that as phone plans change.
So is that the biggest difference here, that phones were $200, now they're upwards of $800 sometimes?
Well, the phones have always been expensive, and you know that's changing as technology does. But what's really changing is the subsidy. When you signed that two-year contract, most carriers threw in a very nice phone subsidy. But what most people didn't think about was the cost of their cell phone was really getting wrapped up in the actual cost of service, and they were paying for it just over the terms of their over their contract. But now the new plans that are coming out, carriers are competing more and more for your business, and these new plans are generally no contract and a lower price, but you pay for your phone either outright at the beginning of your service, or you pay for it each month in installments. Perhaps several of the plans, it's about $27 a month for an iPhone 6. So you're paying for it every month, but then at the end of that period when you've paid off your phone, your bill will go down a little bit, and that's where you see the savings. So it's particularly valuable for people who tend to hold on to their phones a little bit longer.
So should you pay off the balance on your phone if you have an expensive one?
Well, it really depends on your personal finances. I think one of the big things about the change is particularly for people who are a little bit tighter on money and have run their budgets a little bit more tightly, need to think about upgrading a cell phone, especially if they're planning on paying it outright. You know, it's a larger expense than they may realize. But really, there's no harm in letting that fee go on your bill every month. They're not charging you interest on it or anything like that. If for some reason you had a plan that would definitely be a different thing to consider. But there's really no harm in carrying it out over the longer term.
What if you're someone who likes to upgrade? The latest thing that comes out, you absolutely have to run out and get it.
These plans can work for you still. You may not notice as much of a savings, perhaps, as, say, one of your friends or one of your family members who doesn't upgrade as frequently. But for some of you who loves to have the newest phone pretty much the day it comes out or shortly thereafter, you may want to look into some of the plans that these carriers offer that are a little bit more geared towards that upgrading your iPhone for life. One of the plans, every time a new iPhone comes out, you can upgrade. But there are, of course, fees behind those as well, so you need to keep a close eye on those fine print details.
Caitlin, what about data? What you should you be looking for?
Well, you really have to shop around, and that's kind of the beauty of these new plans, since you won't be under a contract under these new plans. If you see something that's better, especially if your usage patterns change, perhaps you find something that's a little bit better because you realize you're using less data than you thought, or perhaps you've started using a lot more. Maybe you're streaming video on your train commute or something like that.
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Caitlin Pitzker from Kiplinger's Personal Finance. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. You're results-driven and you're ambitious. You've established yourself professionally and now you're looking for more. Take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey with Edible Arrangements, the brand that revolutionized gifting with handcrafted fruit arrangements and gourmet chocolate-covered fruit, now also offers delicious everyday treats like smoothies, fruit salads, and parfaits. As an Edible Arrangements franchisee, you get access to an established brand with 16 years of growth, over 80% brand recognition, and 1,200 locations worldwide. You'll benefit from know-how, support, and millions of visitors to the Edible Arrangements e-commerce platform. Discover why Entrepreneur Magazine named Edible Arrangements a top franchise and among their best of the best for 2015. Start your journey to sweet success as an Edible Arrangements franchise owner. Call 1-888-727-4258 or go to edible.com. That's 1-888-727-4258 or edible.com. You're like me, you're thinking, I know that. Where do I know that from? Well, before it gets too cold this fall, depending on where you live, you might want to put some DIY home projects on your to-do list. For tips, we're joined now by actress Jenny Garth, who you know as Kelly from her days on the hit TV show Beverly Hills 90210. There's the music, right? She now hosts a show on HGTV called The Jenny Garth Project. Jenny, we got to look better than the neighbor.
About 64% of people out there want their yards to look better than their neighbor's yard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that because it's about, you know, people are being honest. Yes, I want my house to look better than my neighbor's house.
Right,
okay,
right.
I admit it. So we know what that means. That means you got to get out there and, you know, roll up your sleeves and get busy and do some work. And a lot of people say they don't have time for that. But I think that if we plan ahead, get your stuff in order, get your ideas, know what materials you need, get them and have them at the ready, then it's, you know, a couple hours of your weekend to really make a difference on the front of your home. And you know, it's fall, so everybody wants to spruce up their homes, give it a little extra something for the next couple of months, something that you come home to at the end of the day and you feel great about. You know, look, I made this look so nice.
Yeah.
Like, I did this.
All right, so how does Kelly from Beverly Hills 90210 now come to offer common yard etiquette?
I know, right? It seems ridiculous when you say it like that, but thanks. It's not Kelly giving yard etiquette. It's Jenny. It's life. And I think that we all have kind of the same things, issues that we deal with. And if you're a homeowner, you know, you've got to keep up your home. And it feels so good to, like, make it look nice. And there's just like a nice home, pride of home ownership, I think.
Yeah. Have you always been a DIYer?
I have. I grew up in the country. My dad was, you know, our gardener, our handyman, okay, our everything, and he taught me along the way. I just would sit and watch him work, and by doing that, I learned so much. And I also just learned to not be afraid to just jump in there and try it, even if, you know, it's not a huge success. At least you gave it your best shot and
right,
you learned something.
Very good. We're speaking with Jenny Garth, host of the Jenny Garth Project on HGTV. So take me back to the Beverly Hills 90210 years. Do you get tired of talking about that, or are you?
No, I don't.
What was my history? What was the defining moment, I guess? Do you have some great story of luck or opportunity about how that role came about?
I still, to this day, I remember very little, like little about yesterday, but I can still remember auditioning for that show and walking away and feeling like I nailed it. Like I was just, you know, 16.
Yeah.
And I can remember Aaron Spelling and his encouraging thumbs up. You know, I knew I had gotten the job, and that was just like, what a big a pivotal time, you know, change for me in my life. It changed everything for me. I wouldn't be here today, you know, talking to you.
Did they say at the time they were looking for somebody like you, for example, or did they have somebody else in mind and you came and wowed them? Like, did it?
No, I don't remember it saying like they wanted, you know, like a lookalike for so-and-so.
Yeah.
I see that now on breakdowns for shows.
Right.
Like they wanted to be like a young whatever. But no, back then it was just the classic, you know, quintessential blonde Beverly Hills snobby rich girl. That was pretty much what I was going for then.
Are you still close with a lot of those castmates?
Yeah, no. Yes, we Tori and I talk a lot. We text each other. Ian from time to time. Luke goes to my gym. So, you know, it's a small world, actually, out there, but they're all like brothers and sisters. We stay very close.
Man, all right, so you're a farm girl in Illinois, basically, right? And And so when you broke the news to your parents that you dropped out of high school, didn't you, to go to Hollywood?
Yeah, well, my mom took me to do all these things.
I just left
the family and did my own thing. I had them with me, and they were all, you know, my dad was skeptic, but supportive, and I couldn't have asked for better parents in that situation. They were kind of like, I don't know what we're doing, but we're going to do it.
Wow. Who had the actor or actress genes in the family? Anybody?
I think I would have to say my dad. He was always, you know, telling his jokes, and, you know, he loved to be the center of attention, which is interesting because I don't like to be the center of attention.
Yeah.
But it sort of taught me to go ahead and be silly when you need to be.
Very good. All right, so the schedule is like what on HGTV for the Jenny Garth Project?
I have no idea.
There you have it. Jenny Garth, apparently the host of a DIY show on HGTV. We just don't know when. Good thing she's likable, right? It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Here's something that'll make you wonder about the training some employees are receiving or not receiving. Aaliyah Sternstein, senior correspondent at NextGov, says months after a suspected malicious email attack breached personnel data at the U.S. Postal Service, a quarter of agency employees still fell for a simulated email scheme. Aaliyah, what have you found?
What's kind of very concerning right now is that there was another phishing attack. None of the employees who got these fake emails reported it to their incident response center, as they are required to do, and a quarter of them actually clicked on the link. Now, the good thing here is that this attack was perpetrated by the inspector general of the agency, so there was no risk. The concern is that what if attackers again try to go at the Postal Service? Their defenses are not high enough right now.
Wow. All right. So what does the inspector general then of the Postal Service do at this point with this information?
Well, luckily for the employees, and I think this is something companies might also want to pay attention to, the inspectors who know the names of the individuals who clicked on this link are keeping them confidential, not telling management. I've heard from security researchers, you don't want to shame the employees.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
want to find out how large the problem is of this deception among the agency, and then train. The other very helpful insight that came out of this report is that it kind of got to the source of the problem, and that's training. The training in how to identify these phishing attacks, which are now very sophisticated and legitimate looking. There is training in how not to fall for them and what to do if you do fall for them so that the entire agency is not compromised.
Jeez, we're speaking with Aaliyah Sternstein, senior correspondent at NextGov. And she's got a look at the U.S. Postal Service almost a year after their phishing scam exposed a bunch of Social Security numbers. So with regards to training, was there a stat in your story that said like 95% or 96% of employees had not been trained on this?
Pretty much the whole work of, unless you were a part of the chief information officer's staff or you were a new hire, you did not undergo training every year. Plus, the training did not explain how to identify a fake malicious email.
Thanks, Aaliyah. That's Aaliyah Sternstein, senior correspondent at NextGov. 13 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service with voice over internet. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be spending some me time at the spa." But the thing about better is, there's always more better. So today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on by a masseuse named Moonshadow, but with its nose to the grindstone, transforming communications for your business by making it better. With a cloud-based infrastructure that grows as your business grows, seamless mobility between all devices so you don't miss that important call, even while Moonshadow is walking down your spine. And all for less than you think. So while you're getting your mani-pedi, Vonage's toenails remain a complete disaster, because Vonage is still out there working to make more better. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call Vonage at 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
The new trend in TV series, starting over from scratch at the beginning of each season. That can include a new setting, storyline, and cast, maybe all three. One that's doing it, Fargo, which made an excellent debut last year. The sophomore season begins Tuesday on FX. Here's the Wall Street Journal's John Jurgensen. John, what's behind starting from scratch?
It's a great way for TV networks and producers to attract big talent. You know, you can have stars like Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson come on board and do 8 episodes or 10 episodes of a season, and then they move on with their lives.
Okay.
They don't need to get locked into a long, 6-year contract for a TV series that that you know you typically see for an ongoing TV series. So they get in, get out, hopefully tell a cool story and get a lot of attention and some viewers, and then they move on.
Just thinking broadly here, right? We tend to watch television programs because we like characters. Isn't there a problem, say, with loyalty when you swap out a whole new cast after one season?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean that's a huge issue with this. I mean that's kind of the pro and the con, right? I mean, on one hand, you don't get to bring back these characters that folks have grown to know and to possibly love through the first season. On the other hand, you get to start fresh, and if maybe you had a kind of a rocky time in your first season, you can go back to the drawing board and maybe kind of do better. There's definitely an upside and a downside to it. Also, economically, you know, you have to build new sets every year, for example. You know, that you can't use the stuff you made last year. So it's like producing a brand new film each year with all new actors and all new sets and stuff.
Well, we're speaking with John Jurgensen, Wall Street Journal reporter. His piece is about TV's newest template for drama. So have we seen that this is, you know, beneficial for revenue?
It's kind of a wash. I mean, just for the reasons I was just saying, you know, it's more expensive to build new sets and things like that every year. On the other hand, you don't have to pay cast members these sort of escalating salaries every year.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Each year they come back, you got to pay them a little bit more and basically keep them on retainer. So you don't have that expense. I think that the other question mark for some of these shows is sort of how they will do as sort of a library title, you know. I think American Horror Story on FX has been really successful for that because people go back and watch them on Netflix, and it's been just a successful show that comes back every year. But something like Fargo, it's been a year and a half since the show has been on the air. You know, it's not something that they can sell with regularity every season. So there's each show is a little bit different in the way it works. And some have some more consistency than others when it comes to the money that they're making.
It seems like it's opening a new door for viewer debate, right? Hey, no, season two is the best. No, season one was way better, right? I mean, who knows?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, that is a great way to think about it because you can compare and contrast each season and each show. You know, Fargo and True Detective have been very much paired in the conversation because they both started at the same time. They both had, you know, two big movie stars that led them in the first season of Fargo.
Yeah.
It was Billy Bob Thornton and Martin Freeman. It's easy to compare those two. But also, I mean, the cool thing is that for folks who didn't see the first season, you know, if you didn't see season one of Fargo, you would be fine starting season two on October 12th without having watched it. I mean, there are some threads that take you back to season one, and that maybe is kind of helps your grounding. But as far as the story and the characters, you know, you can just jump in and you don't have to go back and do your homework.
Nice, John. Wall Street Journal's John Jurgensen. The future of the popular Punkin' Chunkin' event in Delaware could be in jeopardy. For the second year in a row, the World Championship event set for next month canceled. The Punkin' Chunkin' Facebook page says organizers have been unable to locate a willing insurance company. Might be understandable since thousands upon thousands of people gather to watch massive air cannons shoot pumpkins over large distances. What could possibly go wrong, right? Punkin' Chunkin' has been seeking a permanent home since 2013 after the farmer hosting the event said he wouldn't let it return to his property. He got sued by a volunteer after an ATV accident at the 2011 Chunk. Chunkers removed the distance competition, though, from the weekend's activities at Dover International Speedway, acknowledging there was not room for the air cannons to propel pumpkins nearly a mile downrange. That was not enough for insurance companies. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. The sort of shave that cuts clean, without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack? When you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price. And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How are we able to save you all this money and still give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 1313 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 1313.